Hey guys, I'm Megan.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is Sinners Among Saints. Hello.
Welcome back.
Another Friday. It's nice outside.
Happy Friday. I know, it feels so nice. But it's supposed to rain again this weekend.
I know. It was weird because it was like so gray this morning and like it had rained. At least it was like our outside of our house was all wet and everything. Yeah. And then I went home after I took the kids to school and like kind of holed up in my bedroom, showered, and then just did like podcast stuff. And by the time I came back out to the world, it was nice weather and sunny and beautiful outside. And I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, when I went in, it wasn't too bad when I went into work. And then I went out at lunch for a minute and it was nice. And then when I left, it was really nice.
Yeah, it was really nice out there.
And then we went and got our swig today and we tried their new coconut. What was it called? Coconut lime cookie or coconut something cookie?
Yeah,
they just got it, and it is so good.
Yeah, it is.
That's been my favorite one.
It's really, really good. If you guys have ever been to Twisted Sugar, it's similar to like their cookie, but it's Swig is really like up to their game with all their cookies in general. They keep having like new cookies all the time, and
because
so
I used to hate
good.
Swig cookies. Like they only had the pink sugar cookie and the chocolate sugar cookie, and they were always frozen, and I just felt like they weren't. Very like they weren't gross, but they weren't very good. I didn't buy them very often. And then all of a sudden they started getting these new ones and I'm like, oh man, these are good. But this one today was definitely
super good.
Yeah,
I
go try it, guys.
I had heard their like sugar cookie was really good. People had always kind of talked about it, and I used to be like a very big fizz person, and they are not cookie people at all. They went through like several different recipes. I don't even know if they have cookies anymore. They might, but I think they started doing kind of other stuff. But their drinks are good. And then we started doing Swig.
Yeah.
And I had like all those gift cards and stuff. So it kind of like swung me there. And their cookies have been so good. They have like usually like their cups of like
little mini ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like their mini ones.
They're so good.
Little dipper things that you can.
Yeah. Little
like different flavored frostings that you can dip them.
They're so good.
But today I went out on another limb.
She did.
And I got Busta Limes, which is delicious. P.S.
Yeah, I did. I don't remember what I... Well, my cup is right there. What did I do last time? It's right behind you. I forgot to throw my cup away, so it was still chilling
here. The Jolly Elf.
Oh, yeah. So this time I did Island Time, and that one's got, like, fresh orange and vanilla. Well, it normally has coconut cream, but I feel like it's a little strong. So I do vanilla and fresca.
Oh.
And
Megan doesn't like the
mango.
Coconut cream. From there, it's my favorite.
It's a little strong, and I like coconut stuff, but I just like it kind of overpowers a lot of the drink.
Love it. So thanks to those who bought us a drink today.
Thanks, guys.
And if you guys want to go support our drink habit, you can go to Buy Us a Drink. We have it on our...
Buy Us a Coffee.
Oh, Buy Us a Coffee. Sorry. Buy Us a Coffee. If it were me, you could buy me a coffee. Megan doesn't drink coffee.
Nope, I don't.
That's okay. These are way fun too, though.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, we have our account to buy us a coffee linked on our website or our Facebook and Instagram.
Yes.
And you can just swing by there and you could just do a one-time donation of however much you want.
Yeah, please. And thank you.
Yeah. So thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks for those who have done it. It's, you know, gives us something to kind of drink or a little treat while we're doing our recording.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Makes us doubly happy.
And it makes me happy because I always get a caffeinated one because I am so tired by Friday night and I get up super early and it's just been a long week and it just keeps me going because sometimes we go kind of later.
Yeah.
into the evening with this. For and sure. then my husband wants to see me after. And so it makes me so that I can stay awake a little bit, which is always good.
So he appreciates that as well.
Yeah. So thanks for Mario too. Yeah. And we have another new Patreon. So big, huge, wonderful shout out to Shacey Elson.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Love you. Love very, you. Very much.
So much. You have no
and
idea.
And we appreciate your continued support because yeah. her husband, Colby, is also a supporter. So he has an account.
Yeah.
And then she just signed up for her own account, which I was like, oh, that was really nice. Yeah. Thanks.
That's awesome.
So we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And they have the cutest little girls in the entire world. So.
How many do they have?
Yeah, three.
Three girls?
Three girls.
Oh, bless your soul. And they're all
very close in age.
Oh, man. And I have one girl, adorable. And she's a good kid, but I almost sold her for anything I could get today, so. eventually
it'll be fine. It'll be great. Yours will be totally different, and they'll be sweethearts forever.
Teenagers are just hard. No matter the gender, no matter the person, because overall, Lily is an amazing child. And
she is amazing.
But she has got a bit of her mom's attitude, and I can't handle it.
Which is awesome, because Megan never really had an attitude when she was her age, honestly.
No, I got more of an attitude older I got.
Yeah, she kind of came into her attitude as we aged.
Yeah.
And Lily just got it, like, right up front. When those hormones hit, she got it. And
I mean, she had it when she was little, too. And I was like, I thought I had years before this happened. And why is it going now? And
nope. Yeah.
Today, I told her if she talked to her friends the way she talked to me, she wouldn't have any friends. Oh, and it's not anything. She doesn't say, like, mean things or like, snap back or anything. It's just the tone of her voice. Like,
and
I
her
should
face.
Yeah, and her face, which she gets from me. I 100% know. And when I try to express my frustration to her dad, he laughs so hard because he lived with me for 18 years.
He's like, hot kettle.
Yeah. He's like, I get scared when she looks at me like that because it's your face. I'm like, I know.
I love it because it reminds me so much of you.
Yeah.
When we were younger. Yeah. Well, and as we were older, but. She's just like a little you.
Yeah. And I can't handle the tone. I'm like, you talk to me like I am so stupid. Like you. And she's like, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. And I'm like, right. That's the problem, is that you don't realize that you're doing it. But every time you talk to me, you act like I am so stupid. And like, why do I breathe and live? And I'm like, it gives me anxiety trying to talk to you because your tone. And like, because
you make
me
feel like I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she didn't really say anything to me. She honestly, on your couch when she started talking about that TikTok, whatever she read to us, was the first time she had talked to me since she got out of school. Because then I went downstairs, I asked them if they had all their stuff done, like, hey, you guys packed for your dads, like everything cleaned up down there, because I had been up in my room still finishing podcast stuff and like, picking some stuff up. And they're like, yeah. I was like, okay. And I come downstairs and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, Nolan, you have toys on the counter, your Switch covered in breadcrumbs, your headphones are right here. And then like turn around and my son eats Nutella sandwiches after school. That's like his after school snack every day. So I turn around and he had made himself one. So great. Glad you did that. But the bread is just open. The Nutella, the lid's not on it. There's Nutella. I don't know if he just spread the Nutella on the counter and then rubbed his bread on it. Like, I don't know what happened.
That's how I feel my kids make their Nutella sandwiches, is because there's Nutella everywhere.
And I'm like, dude.
And the other day we went to get ready for Knox's baseball game and he had to get on his baseball pants. And he's like, I can't wear these. And I'm like, why? Because they're dirty. I'm like, how are they dirty?
Yeah.
I don't know, but it looks like poop. And I was like, what are you talking about? It looks like what?
Did you poop in them?
What? Like, yeah, like, did you poop in them? Is it poop? Did you fall in dog poop? Like, what is happening? Yeah. And he's like, no, I think it might actually be Nutella, but it looks like poop. Yep. And I was like, go lick it and tell me. go lick it and tell me if it's Nutella or dog poop.
Yeah.
He's like, Mom. You're like, okay, well, at least smell it.
Yeah. There's ways. Nolan has learned, because we've had far too many of those where he gets in just to his underwear when he eats his Nutella sandwiches. Because the one time I told him, he had like a hoodie that was white and with like black smiley faces on it. And I was like, hey, when you go make your sandwich, like make sure you take off your hoodie. And he's like, okay. And then he didn't. And it was all over. And so I like, got really mad at him because like, seriously, like that is a white hoodie. I told you to take it off. So now he knows. But anyway, so like I turn around, there's like stuff everywhere. Lily, the stuff that Lily used to make her after school snack with is like on the stove. There's like crumbs everywhere, dishes in the sink. And I had just done the dishes. And I was like, you guys, like, I don't know why you think like I want to, you know, do all of this cleaning. And then I have to I ask you and you say you've got it all cleaned up.
You're like, yeah, and we're good.
You like, I'm not, you know, picking up all of your stuff. So as I'm like complaining, right, Nolan's picking up his stuff and he's like, I'm sorry, Mom, I'm sorry. Lily takes her snarky ass that's sitting on the couch right next to where we are and goes and sits on the stairs the entire time I clean the kitchen. And Nolan comes back down after he put his stuff upstairs and he's like, Mom, I'm going to do the dishes so that you don't have to do them. And what else do you need from me? And I'm like, thank you for actually helping, as she sits her little ass on the stairs. She like literally got up in the middle of my rant and just moved herself so she didn't have to listen to me anymore. And I wanted to slit her throat in that moment. Like, yeah. So much.
Kids are fun.
So
they're
much.
They're so fun. We love them.
And then she'll go to her dad's and she'll be like, I don't know why Mom's mad at me. And so he'll like, Shane will tell me because we're very close. He'll be like, so this is what Lily like said. And I'm like, okay. So then I had to tell him before that. If she says anything, this is why I am mad at her. It's because she has an attitude when she talks to me. And then she knew we were cleaning and she went and sat on the stairs.
Yeah.
Excused herself from the activity.
My kids are getting to that point. And so, yeah. I just played the silent game with Cruz the other day because I was like, I'm not talking to you anymore. And then that really like upset him. I'm waiting for him to get to the point where he's like, good, don't freaking talk to me. But yeah. He's still at the point where he kind of wants me to talk to him.
Right.
And so then he'll like be very apologetic and I'm just like, whatever. Don't talk to me.
Yeah. Lily will be 14 on the 8th. So on Wednesday. So she's just in the throes of teenagery.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. But then when she was leaving with her dad, she was like, bye, I love you.
Like,
love you too. Glad you're going to your dad's.
You. She's a good kid.
She is a good kid. She really is. But
just teenagers suck in general.
It is. It's just hard. And especially when it's like your first, because it's whole, like it's this weird territory. It's like when you think when you become a mom for the first time, it's all new and it's hard and you don't know what you're doing. But like, it's different because the thing that you're taking care of doesn't have any opinions about life and what's going on. And they're just there to be with you as you fail or whatever. And they're just like, well, I guess I'm still alive, so all is well. But then when you hit teenagerhood or whatever, teenagerdom, it is like this whole new realm of life. And there's someone else who has an opinion and a thought. And can push back.
And they're figuring out who they are. And so then they're very opinionated. Well,
and it's so different because
they know everything about everything. And I'm like, that's Cruz right now. And I'm like, oh my God, you do not know everything. You are 12.
Yeah, I feel like Isaiah is that way.
Stop it.
I always tell him, I know you think I'm completely stupid, but really I am far smarter than any of you children because I have lived many, many, many more years.
Yeah.
So you think I'm dumb, but I'm really not. I promise.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it's a new world and it's hard. And it's really hard with your first. I think all the kids are hard probably because they're just different. But the first time, especially for, I think, us, because we grew up in very different times. Like, we didn't have social media. We didn't have phones. We didn't have, I was talking to Lily because I was listening to this other podcast and it's one that kind of has like relationships and stuff. And this girl, when she went to high school in 9th grade, so she was 14, there was this teacher there that was like he was like 30 or early 30s. He was like the cool teacher, the, you know, everyone really liked him. And he was a athletic trainer, and he eventually like got her number because she was on the soccer team and it was like during summer and she needed to get her ankle wrapped. And so he's like, well, here's my number, like you can text when you're on your way to school to make sure that I'm there and I can get you wrapped before games or whatever. All of the communication while she was in high school until she turned 18 was not inappropriate. There was no inappropriate thing said, but he would randomly like message her, right? Like it would just very, not a ton of conversation, but enough. And then when she turned 18, he went like real hard. And then they had this like very toxic relationship, and he was married and had kids. And okay. Then she finds out, like, as time goes on, like, that there's these other kids, girls, that he had been inappropriate with that were underage, all this stuff. So I'm trying to talk to Lily about that because she has a teacher at her school that's super cool and everybody likes him. And so I'm like, you know, just this boundaries. Teacher cannot, like, ever text you. And she's like, oh, sick, Mom. That's so gross. And I'm like, I'm just like, what I'm telling you is that, like, it can be done in a way that's not inappropriate or doesn't seem like it's crossing boundaries. But what I'm telling you is that no teacher at all is ever allowed to text you. They can text me, but that's it. And she's just like so grossed out. And she's like, like, stop. That's so gross. Like, why? And I'm like, I'm just, listen, when I was your age, if a teacher wanted to talk to me, they would have had to call my house and talk to my parents before they got to me. So that didn't happen. Yeah. And then the only way we would be able to have contact was like,
now it's like they have direct access. If I was at the
school, like if I was at the school and then my parents could be like, why are you staying at school all the time? Why are you here? Where are you going? It's different because now teachers can have access to you 24/7 without a parent realizing or understanding that that is happening. Yeah, so it's just, it's such a different world. And it's so hard to parent that when you haven't experienced that part yourself.
That's true.
As a kid. Yeah. And you're just coming at it as like an adult with this different thought and mindset, and kids are like, you're so stupid, like I'd never do that. And I'm like, you, no one is like, I'm gonna go get groomed by an older teacher.
That's not your goal going into anything. But it does happen.
It does,
and far more than it ever should.
Oh, absolutely.
But it definitely does.
It does. And so, it's scary. So bless all of us parents.
Yeah, we need drinks.
We do. It's no wonder parents. No wonder we have Happy Valley down here.
All right.
All right. Well,
on that note, should we get into this?
I think we should.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay. So this case is, it's a recommendation.
Oh, okay.
All right. So this case is a recommendation from one of our favorite listeners, Spanky.
Thanks, Spanky.
Thanks. We're trying to, is one of our most prolific, like, case suggesters, and they're always great cases. So we're trying to get through them, and I hope that you enjoy when we do.
Yes.
We do get them done. So know that you are thought of quite a bit.
Yeah, thank you.
So, let's jump into this one. It's kind of crazy. And it's sort of close. It's in Colorado, so in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, that's really close.
Okay, so on February 28th, and it's recent, 2021.
Ooh.
Okay, so it's a very recent. So February 28th, 2021, police receive a call at about 2 a.m. about a car in the water at the Blue Heron boat ramp.
In the water?
Yeah, in Grand Junction, Colorado.
There's never anything good that comes from a call that says, hey guys, we're at this boat dock and there's a car in the water.
Yeah, no, at 2 a.m. No.
No.
So when they arrive on scene, they are met with 19-year-old Brian Cohey and his parents.
Okay.
Now, just so that everyone is aware, Brian Cohey's father is also named Brian Cohey. Okay. And his mother's name is Terry, but throughout the case, I just refer to them as his mother and his father because it's too much to the Bryans, okay?
Junior, senior.
So, So, he's Brian, and then his parents are just going to be his mother and father.
Okay.
So, as police are, like, begin trying to figure out what happened, Brian's mother tells officers that Brian's an inexperienced driver and that he had parked his car near the water and then got out to walk around. When he got back in to drive away, he was unable to get the car out, and then it slipped back into the water. So police are like, okay, and they're all just kind of laughing, like, you know, because
it would be a stupid thing that a
kid would do, right? Yeah. So they're all just kind of like laughing, and the police are like, okay, well, where's Brian so that we can talk to him and see, you know, exactly like what happened. And so she tells them that he's sitting in their car because he was cold because it's February in Colorado and he's wet. So he is sitting in their car. So the police walk over and get to the car and they're kind of like talking and joking with him, and they ask him if he'd, you know, step out of the vehicle so that they can talk to him. And he's like, well, I don't have on any pants.
I'm sorry, Brian. What?
He's like, they were wet and I was really cold from being in the water, so I took them off. and I'm like in here warming up. And so the cop,
I mean, I probably would do the same, right, yeah, honestly, especially if you're in jeans, because there's nothing worse
wet jeans
oh, yeah, that never dry, never dry, and they're so uncomfortable.
Yeah. And so the police kind of laugh. And
I mean, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. And they're like, okay, like, well, I guess we didn't know that, but like, yeah, why don't you please stay in the car? Like, we'll just, you just stay there and we'll talk here. So he tells officers that frequently he goes out on late night drives just to kind of get out and like think. That's okay. Something that his parents say that he does do that quite often. And that he had just driven out to the boat ramp and he kind of parked the car and he said he got out and he was just like walking around and it was really nice out. And then he got back in his car and went to leave and he was stuck. And he tried to, you know, like floor it out and do all the things that kids try to do to get their car unstuck from like wet ground. And then he just ended up slipping into the water.
Okay.
So they're super nice to him. They're like, really like, you know, are you okay? Aside from your bruised ego, maybe. And
wait, so is his car parked on like a sandy area?
Well, it's like a boat dock. So it goes down. So yeah.
So his car is parked on the boat ramp?
He wasn't quite on the ramp, but it like it's very steep heading down towards the water.
Okay.
So he had pulled just too far.
Okay.
Kind of down, thinking he'd be okay. And then when he went to pull out, he just like his car got stuck and he couldn't get out and it just slipped.
Okay.
Forward into the water. And so when you see like, and I'll post pictures and stuff, but when you see it like it's floated out a little bit. It's like water's like above, you know, like above the doors.
Shit.
Like in the water. Okay.
Okay.
And so they're just kind of, you know, teasing him and he's like, he laughs and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm okay. Maybe out like $7,000. But other than that, like I'm okay. And so they get all the information that they need and then they try to head back over and figure out like exactly what to do. Cause they're like, we've never had this car out. And they're like, and no one's going to want to come and tow it in the middle of the night and get in the water.
No.
Like, no tow truck driver is going to be like, sure, I'll come and wade in the water and, like, try and get your car out.
In February. In Colorado.
At this point, around, like, 3 a.m. Yeah.
No, they're
like,
pass.
So they're trying to figure out what to do. Eventually, they do find someone who is willing to come in the middle of the night and tow the car out.
Okay.
Which, I mean, if I was a tow truck driver, I'd be like, sure, but I'm going to charge you, like,
A shit ton of money.
Yes. But I'll come out and do it. Yeah. Sure.
You betcha.
So Brian's mother tells police that they didn't allow Brian to get his license until he was 18. So he's only been driving for like about a year.
Okay.
Because they didn't want him to get into stupid wrecks like kids do when they're 16 and 17. And then she says, but stupid must not have an age limit. And then they kind of all laugh. Uh-huh. And, you know, they just chalk it up to like a dumb decision made by a young kid who hasn't been driving for very long.
Okay.
So as they're like talking about what to do, Brian's mom does come and tell them that like she's found someone to come tow the car out, but this guy wants a picture of like the car, but her phone's at 10% and she doesn't think it's going to survive like taking a picture and sending it. So the officer tells her like, I can take a picture. I can send it to him for you. Like, that's no big deal. And she's like, oh my God, like, thank you. That'd be so great. And then she's like, you know, does Brian really need to stay on scene? Like, he's cold and I'm sure he'd really like to, you know, get home and like warm up and shower and all that stuff. And yeah, they're like, no, like it's not an accident. So he doesn't really like need to stay here. There's no like crime scene or, you know what I mean? It's yeah, not like somewhere he needs to stay. So they're like, no, he's good. Like you can take him home. And so Brian's parents take him home. And about an hour later, the parents come back to the scene to kind of get the car out and all that yeah, kind of stuff. Right. And the tow truck's removing the car from the water. And as they're pulling the car out of the water, the officers think that they see maybe blood on the back bumper. So they go back to the Cohey's car because the parents are just kind of chilling in the car. And they ask if maybe Brian could have hurt himself like while he was getting out of the car because he went into the water like in the car and had to like climb out. Right.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't think so. And the officer's like, well, maybe like, you know, adrenaline was pumping like. You get hurt sometimes and you don't notice that you're hurt. And they're like, you know, maybe now that he's gone home and he's had time to like warm up and clean and shower and all that stuff, like maybe he's noticed that he cut himself or something. And we just want to make sure like he's okay and he doesn't need
medical attention.
Yeah. So she's like, well, I can call him. So she calls him and there's this documentary and I'll post it. It's just on YouTube.
Okay.
And it's called Explore With Us is the people.
Okay.
And so they did this whole documentary, but it's literally the whole thing is body cam footage, so like this whole part you get to watch from the officer's body cam. And then all of the interrogation footage from when he's in the police station, all from all the people. So it's okay. Pretty cool because you get to like just see all of the
interview cool.
And how they do it all. Anyway, so his mom calls and she's got him on speakerphone and she's like, you know, hey, like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah. She's like, well, like, just, you know, get your car. They just got your car out of the water. And the officers say, like, they think they see blood on the back bumper. And we just want to make sure you're okay. And he's like genuinely shocked. Like, no, like, blood? Like, what? Like, no, I'm fine. Like, and she's like, are you sure? Like, you're not cut anywhere. And I guess he'd had, like, an abscess in his armpit.
Ew.
That he had just had, like, lanced a couple of days prior. And so she's like, I don't know if maybe, like, that had come open because they had to, like, stitch it. And maybe he, like, you know, was bleeding from there. And anyway, so he's just like, no, like, literally, I'm fine. Like, I have no idea.
Well, God,
like,
he's probably going to have to get it lanced again after being in dirty-ass lake water.
Right, yeah.
Ew.
So gross. But he's like, no, like, I literally have no idea. Like, I'm fine. I'm not cut anywhere. Like, I have no idea what that is. And they're like, okay. So, you know, despite all that, like, once the car's out, the police do release the car back to the Cohees that night because it's their car. So the next day on March 1st, 2021.
Even with the blood, they're not like, yeah, maybe we should grab a swab of this to see, just, you know, just in case something nefarious happens later on.
Yeah, no.
There's blood on a bumper that nobody knows how it got there.
Nope.
And we found the car in the lake. That might be a good idea.
They are surprisingly nice, like, to everybody, which it's not bad, right? Because we see so far.
Yes, it is. When you were a cop, you cannot be that nice.
No, but we see far too often, like, officers that are just mean for no reason and kind of dicks where you're like, well, like, the, like,
yeah,
quote unquote, bedside manner is not too great here.
True.
But these guys are super nice and they're just like, you know, it's just this dumb kid and he went into the water and who knows what this is, whatever. So,
okay.
March 21st, officers.
That'll bite him in the ass.
Sort of.
Okay.
Officers find themselves back at the Blue Heron boat ramp the next morning after someone has reported finding the wallet of 69-year-old Warren Barnes, who's a homeless man and who had just actually been reported missing that day as well.
Okay.
So the woman who reported him missing met officers at the boat ramp and told them why she'd reported him missing, because like I said, he's a homeless man. She was the owner of Monique's Bridal. And she places a chair outside her boutique every day for Warren to come and sit and read his books.
Stop. That is so nice.
Apparently he is, like, loved by everyone in town.
Aww.
They call him the reading man.
Oh, that's so cute.
Okay, so she said she'd last seen him on Saturday, and March 1st is a Monday.
Okay.
And she said,
the shop's not open Sunday, probably.
Probably not. So she had, well, no, I think it was open. So she had last seen him Saturday, and she said to him, you know, see you tomorrow, Warren. And he was like, you know, yeah, like, see you tomorrow. And then he never showed up, which she thought was weird, because he's always there. Okay. Yeah, so he didn't show up on that Sunday or Monday. So she hadn't seen him that Sunday or that Monday, and she thought it was, like, super weird. But obviously, like, he's a homeless man, too. So,
yeah,
you know, like, you just never know.
True.
And, like, who knows, like, it's freaking February in Colorado when you're, like, living outside.
Maybe he got sick.
Yeah. So, like I said, he was fondly known as a reading man, and he was often seen outside Monique's Bridal. But when he wasn't reading, he was also helping store owners, like, move boxes. And he also worked at a place called People Ready, where he had worked for the last 4 years. Okay?
Okay.
So, Warren had never missed a shift the entire time he was employed. So, when he failed to show up for work on Monday, March 1st, his employer called Monique to see if she had seen him, because they know that that's there where he hangs out. After talking to Monique, and she's like, no, like, last time I saw him was on Saturday. And everyone's just like, okay, well, that's, like, super weird. And so once she heard from Warren's workplace that he hadn't shown up for work, she hadn't seen him, that's when she decided to call in to the police department and report him as missing.
Okay.
Okay, that same morning, someone had also called People Ready and said that they had found this wallet near the boat dock, and it belonged to Warren Barnes, and wanted to know if they knew him, because there was this People Ready card in the wallet. And they said, you know, yeah, actually, he works here, but he didn't show up to work today. And the person on the phone just said, like, well, I have his wallet. Like, I'd like to return it to him. Like, will you just let him know? Here's my information. And so this had raised alarms for, like, several people.
Yeah.
So when Monique meets him down at the boat dock, she tells them, like, she's super worried because she says the boat dock is really far out of town, like, for walking, and that Warren would never, ever walk all the way to the boat dock. She's like, he's never down here. He's not where he stays.
Okay.
Like, this is, like, super concerning to me. Like, why would he, you know, be down here? And police also speak to a woman who worked at a gas station who states that every morning at about 6 a.m. without fail, Warren would show up. They'd let him in before any of the customers. They'd give him free coffee. And aww, she just kept, like, saying, like, over and over, like, he's such a nice man. She's like, he looks rough, but he is, like, such a nice person. And, you know, he's always there. Like, there's
everybody
never
loves him.
So when he didn't show up Monday morning, she was worried. So they called police as well.
Wow.
Right? The, like, most popular homeless person in the world.
We have people who have, like,
whole families.
Full-blown families and go missing for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And no one notices. But this homeless guy has made such an impact on people that we have three people now that are like, this is not okay.
Yeah, this is not normal for him.
Yeah.
So sad.
That is sad.
So Monique has, apparently she has a picture of Warren that she had taken from the summer of 2019. So she gives that to officers. So they have a picture of him. And she's like, obviously this is a couple years old, but, like, you know, here's what he looks like. And hopefully this will, like, help in the search for him. Because, like, they're all just, like, so worried about poor Warren. Okay, so after the police had released Brian's car back to his parents, his father begins to clean it out because it's, like, waterlogged and doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty much kind of just done. And so he's planning on taking it into some place called Scotty's to see if he can salvage anything from the car. So he's cleaning it out. As he's cleaning it out, he finds this large 12-inch knife in the glove box and a wallet that had fallen between the seat and the passenger door. He opens the wallet, thinking it's Brian's, only to find that it's not, but it does belong to a man named Warren Barnes. So he looks through the wallet.
Another wallet?
No. So this is just the wallet. So it was Brian's dad that found the wallet.
Oh.
He calls people ready, tells them, like, I just want to return this to him. I found it by the boat dock. Here's all my information.
Whoa.
When you see him, will you please let me, or will you please let him know
that
so I can get him his wallet back?
Okay.
And so after this, like, phone call where this place is like, yeah, we totally know him, but he didn't come to work today. And this 12-inch knife and the blood on the back of the car, his parents are, like, a little concerned. His dad ends up confronting him about the wallet and is like, whose wallet is this?
Who is Warren?
And Brian's just like, I just found it. Like, when I got out of the car at the boat dock, it was on the ground. So I picked it up and I threw it in the car and I was going to, you know, return it to him later, whoever the person was, but I just hadn't thought about it. And he's like, but why didn't you tell us, like, after the fact? I found this wallet. And he's like, well, I just forgot. Like, with
it's
all,
like,
this stuff going on,
all of the blood rushed to my genitals because I was freezing.
Right? Yeah. He's like,
my brain lost function for a minute.
He's like, with all the adrenaline, all the craziness, like, with the car, like, I just totally forgot that it was even in there.
Okay.
And so his dad's like, okay, like, they feel like things are, like, a bit off, but as you will learn as more of this goes on, they don't really want to recognize what's right in front of their face.
Well, and so far everything can be easily explained,
for
right?
Sure.
Like,
for sure.
Like, yeah, I did. I was clearing my head. I was walking around the boat dock. I found a wallet. I threw it in the car, and then everything happened.
Yeah, I totally forgot about it.
Yeah, but I still don't know how the blood got there.
Yeah,
or the knife.
So later that day, Brian goes over to a friend's house. And while he's gone, his mom goes into his room. She said she was, like, putting stuff away and tidying up, like moms do, I guess. Maybe not for their 19-year-olds, but that's what she's doing. And she sees this big, like, Rubbermaid container in his closet. So she opens it, and she said she starts pulling things out to see, like, what is in here? And she comes across a couple of white trash bags. So I am going to play you.
Hang on. First of all, if I go into my 19-year-old son's room and find a Rubbermaid container, I'm not opening that shit for anything. I don't want to know what is in there.
Yeah, I don't think I want to even go in there and see what's in my 19-year-old son's room. Like,
no.
I just don't.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Nope.
Unless, I mean.
So good on her, I guess.
Yeah. So here is a 911 call that police receive after this.
911 is John. What's the address of the emergency?
Hi, there is an emergency. I found something in my son's closet wrapped in a plastic bag.
Okay, what was it?
I think it's a human head.
It's a what?
I think it's a human head.
Why do you think it's that?
Because it looks like it. It's all an ear.
Is it bloody or is it like anything like that?
Just, can you just come? What? Do I have to take a picture and send it to you?
What's the address? Come? Is your son there now?
He just pulled up. We wanted to make sure he was here before we called.
How old is he?
19. He's had a little bit of a fascination with the morbid, but he was channeling it, I thought, into becoming a crime scene investigator, but not so much.
Do you think he's going to be cooperative with us?
I don't know. I don't think he'll be violent. Okay. Just came back from his friend's house.
Does he have any weapons in his room, or do you guys have any in the house?
I don't know. I think that he has a shotgun, but we can certainly remove it immediately before he gets in his room. He's out by the car now, so.
Is the bag still in the closet?
No, it's in my kitchen sink. And there's a secondary bag that I have not opened. It's currently covered with a towel.
And there's a second bag?
There's a second bag, though. I don't know what's in it. I didn't open it.
Oh, sorry. Did he take the second bag out of the closet?
I took the second bag out of the closet and put it in the sink.
Where's Brian now?
I think he's still outside.
And you're in the backyard now?
I am, yes, because I don't want him to hear me.
Okay.
What?
So.
Okay, go.
Yeah. So prior to calling 911, Brian's mother calls her husband, telling him, like, you need to get home, like, right now.
You're going to shit yourself
right now.
See what we found.
And her husband's like, well, I'm picking up, I think Andy's his brother's name, his younger brother. Like, I'm picking Andy up right now. Like, I'll have him with me. And she's like, I don't care. Like, you need to get here now. And it's kind of weird because as you watch, like, this documentary, I don't think they live together. But they refer to each other as husband and wife. But Brian also talks about living, that was when I lived at my dad's house. This is when I lived at my mom's house.
Okay.
So it's weird because she always refers to him as her husband.
Okay.
And, like, you know, they go together to, like, pick up Brian's car. Like, so I don't know what's happening there. But I don't think he lives in this house. Anyway, so.
So when she calls and she says that she found what looks to be a human head.
Uh-huh.
Did she say something about the ear? I couldn't hear.
Yeah, he asked, how do you know it's that? And she's like, because I saw, like, I think I saw an ear.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so after she calls her husband, then she calls Brian and tells him that he needs to bring the car back because his brother needs it to do a driving lesson because he's got his learner's permit. So he's, like, 15.
Okay.
And so she's like, you need to bring the car back. She doesn't want to tip him off to anything because she's, like, kind of scared at this point of, like, him
well,
and
yeah,
like
you would be wouldn't you
what
be terrified?
He's gonna do. Oh my God, yes.
I would not even call him. I would be like
I would be terrified of him, like just from knowing after learning about him as a person. Like I'd be terrified of him before this point, but apparently they weren't. So
well they thought they were she thought he was channeling it in the right direction.
Yeah, in the complete right direction. So once when she calls those people, then she calls 911 and she kind of goes outside and they're just waiting for officers. So officers show up and as they do, they officer approaches Brian and he's like super calm and I'm going to play.
As an officer, would you call dibs on this or would you be like, not it?
I mean, I feel like I would call dibs, but they usually call, you know, they're just going to assign it to someone.
I know.
But I would definitely go as backup. Once I heard that shit, I'd be like, I'm on my way there.
Cops were like, done and done.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to play you their interaction.
How much? Cooperate. I am going to cooperate.
Okay, so parents have some concerns of some stuff they may have found in your room?
Yeah, I believe so.
And what would it be?
A human head and hands.
Do you have anything on you? He's going to cut, poke, hurt, stick me anything without reaching for nothing? Don't reach for nothing.
My phone and my wallet. That's okay.
Well, I'm going to have you face that way. Put your hands on top of your head for me real quick. I just want to make sure you interlace your fingers for me real quick, all right?
Okay, I have seen this. I've seen the first video, I think, when she tagged us. Yeah. And now I remember because they're coming in. And he walks out and he's just like very nonchalant. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, I'm going to cooperate.
Yeah.
A human head and hands.
And when he says it, because they ask him, like, you know, what would they have found? He, like, kind of turns his head. And then when he says, like, a human head and hands, he, like, turns his head, like, all, like, ominous, like, at the it's so creepy.
Oh.
So creepy. But officers are so nice with, like, to him. They're like, hey, like, we just need to search you. They search him. Then they're like, hey, you know, go with this other officer while I talk to your parents, whatever. And so he goes with this female officer. And this initial officer goes to like talk to the parents, and at this point Brian's mom's like literally on the ground just like bawling.
Oh, this like poor just mom. Sobbing. I can't even imagine.
No. So the officer asks Brian's father, like, hey, can I take a look at what she said she found? And he's like, sure, I haven't seen it, but like it should just be in here. So he walks this officer into the home. The cop walks over to the sink, and there's like a towel that's laid over the sink. So he moves the towel, he opens up the bag and like literally like opens it up, and then he just like shuts it and he's like, yep, and just takes his gloves off and like walks out of the house. Like you can tell that he like, I think it kind of like freaked him out. Like,
yep, this is not a joke. Like, it's actually
he
happening.
He like literally was like a split second. Holy he like opened shit. The bag and then he was like, oh, yep, oh, yep, it's the freaking head. So he leaves, is heading back out to his car. Officers are still being like super nice to him. The female officer's like chit chatting with him as they're walking over to the car. She's like, you know, hey, like, how have you been doing? And he's like, well, I've not been doing very well. I haven't been feeling well. And she's like, that's understandable. He's like, yeah, I've just been like really anxious the last few days. And, you know, she tells him like, hey, I'm gonna have you get in the car. I'll turn the air conditioning on for you. And so he gets in the car, and out of nowhere, he just says, Grand Junction's been quite violent lately. The officer like doesn't even like respond. She doesn't make, because you're watching her body cam footage at this point, and it's like she doesn't even like act like it even happened. It's just like so random.
That is so
and
weird.
So weird. It's just like, oh, whatever. And then the initial officer comes back over, gets in the car, tells Brian like, hey, you know, how are you doing? And Brian's like, well, I'm kind of thirsty. And he's like, well, yeah, I can get you water from your house. Like, I can't guarantee anything, but like, I can get you water as soon as we can get you some water, but I'll make sure that you get some. He's like, okay. And then he gets in the car and tells him like, hey, now we're going to head over to the sheriff's office. I'm also having your family come down there. And this whole time they've never cuffed him. Okay. So he's just like sitting in the car, like no handcuffs. The whole family is like following him down to the station. On the way there, Brian makes another like super creepy remark as they're driving under this bridge, and he just says, it was right there under the bridge. But the officer like doesn't say anything. He doesn't respond.
They're not like, what was right there under the bridge?
No, because they have to wait till they read him his rights, or else they can't like use any of that in court.
Shit.
So he just keeps driving.
How have they not arrested him when they already found human remains in his closet?
I mean, they're taking him in. He's essentially, he doesn't ever leave, but he's just not cuffed yet. So on the way into the station, Brian asks officers like if they're okay with him not being cuffed, and the officer's like, yes, I'm okay with you not in cuffs. Brian's like, okay, thank you. And they like get him into the station, and they walk him into an interrogation room, and then like begin the whole process of questioning. They start questioning with Brian's parents, and Brian's father tells police about like how he was cleaning out the car, how he found Warren's wallet, like found this knife, all of these things. But his father says that like when he confronted Brian about everything, like he was so sincere when he told him that, like, I swear I don't know who that person is. Like, the only Warren I know is the kid I go to school with, and that's obviously not him. And so his dad said he just like believed him because he was like so genuine when he said everything.
Yeah. Okay.
But he goes on to say that like with the knife and the wallet and the blood smear, that like he did feel like there was something wrong, but he just didn't want to admit that.
Well, hell no, there's
anything
that's
was
the last
really
place
going
you
on,
want
right?
Your mind to go, like,
yeah,
did my kid just kill somebody?
Yeah, so I'm sure that's he's not,
like if I were to find that in my teenage son's
yeah
car, I wouldn't. That's not what I would go to. My boys all have knives.
Yeah,
my 12-year-old has like big machetes.
Yeah,
it's. I feel like it's kind of a boy thing. So that's why I said like a lot of this can be easily explained away until you find the freaking head and hands.
If it was a normal person, but yeah. Well, we'll learn more about Brian and. There's a lot. There's a lot.
Okay.
So meanwhile, investigators are in another room with Brian and they begin questioning with him. He's like super cooperative, super calm. They begin asking him just really simple questions like, you know, hey, like, did you grow up here? Where did you go to school? Do you work? And they ask him like if he knows why he's there. And he just is like, yeah, I murdered someone.
What?
It's just so
yeah.
Duh. Like, duh. I murdered someone. Okay, it's super weird.
Oh.
So I'm going to start playing you Brian's, like, accounts of things, okay?
There's any details that you can remember.
So, because, I mean, Murray going to jail for 15 years, probably.
I have no idea.
Because
we're at the beginning.
It's murder. I mean, I'm going to jail for 20, probably. But so I figured I fight it.
Okay. So what's important to me is to learn as much about you and what you did and as I can.
Well,
as many details as you can give me, the better.
Let's see. Yeah, it was the night of February 27th. It was a full moon. And I figured I could see so well. Why not try it out? I am in a bad state of mind at that time. I have major depressive disorder, so I am not thinking something positively.
Okay.
And I'm cruising around for an hour and a half. So I fill up on gas halfway through, and I'm eventually driving underneath the bridge near the sheriff's office. I'm bad with superheroes. I'm bad with words. I'm just...
Yeah.
By the way, I'm a habitual link shaker. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
You send people who have committed crimes like me. Do we stay in this county jail or are we moved?
It all depends on what the judge says. So we were at the bridge?
Yes, I was at the bridge. I was cruising. There was a road underneath, right?
Uh-huh.
Under the overpass. And I was driving along and I see a shape here on the railway track. So I'm like, oh, interesting. So I go up, and as I'm looking, I see a large thing wrapped in a canvas.
Okay.
And I'm like, that's a homeless person. So I grab my knife, I put on 3 layers of gloves, because plastic gloves can betray their users because they're so thin, the final gloves,
mm-hmm.
by imprinting your fingerprints through. So I put on 2, 3 on one hand. I took the knife, I pulled back the canvas, and I stabbed his neck.
Okay.
He was panicking at first in his old man voice. He was in his 50s. I know why I call him an old man. He was saying, What are you doing? Why? Ah. And I just kept on stabbing his neck. Is it okay if I do a demonstration?
Oh, yeah.
This is him. I was straddled on top of him like this.
Okay.
And he couldn't fight back. It was actually surprisingly easy. I was barely breaking a sweat. I thought, homeless guy, he's going to be tough. But no, it was actually surprisingly easy. And during the time, I was growling and making animalistic noises. The whole ordeal lasted about a minute and a half.
Okay.
And when I was finished stabbing him, he took out his last breath, a grunt, and his head was halfway cut off in stabs. All the while, no, actually, after I killed him, I just couldn't stop saying, stinky, dirty, dirty, stinky, stinky. I wasn't smelling anything, but...
What the fuck?
Yeah. So many things. So, first of all, he's very, like, there's a lot of parts on this where he's, like, smiling. Like,
you can hear him smiling.
Yeah.
Like, you can hear how happy and excited he is.
Yeah. And at the very beginning,
to be telling this.
In the very beginning when he's like, well, it's murder. And he, like, laughs and he's like, just like, it's no big deal for him. Like, this is all super cool that he's there. And then that part when he's like, can I give you a demonstration? And then he like literally gets on the ground, like he's straddling someone and pantomimes, you know, stabbing this poor guy in the neck.
So many times that his head's halfway cut off by the time he's done.
Yeah.
That is horrific.
Yeah. It's so creepy.
And poor Warren, like.
Poor Warren.
Like, wakes up and just asks him why.
Yeah. I mean.
And he just keeps stabbing him. Mm-hmm.
And so at the end there, when he says, like, and I just kept saying, like, stinky, dirty, dirty, stinky. And he's like, I don't know why I was saying that. But interestingly, one of Brian's social media accounts is that_stinky_boy. So I don't know if, like, that ties in somehow, or, like, I don't know if kids called him stinky. Or, like, where that comes from, but it's just kind of weird that, like, he was saying, like, you know,
dirty, stinky,
as he's stabbing him. And he actually has a social media account that's called That Stinky Boy. So, I don't know.
Ew.
He was also wearing a Michael Myers mask and the iconic blue jumpsuit.
Stop it.
While committing the murder.
Stop.
Brian said that he had worn that for Halloween the previous year and that he associated that outfit with violence. So he thought it would be something good to wear. How creepy is that?
That, like, I have chills.
Can you imagine? I mean, you're a homeless person. I'm sure he's seen plenty living out on the streets. But to be woken up in the middle of the night with Michael Myers stabbing you to death.
Literally stabbing you to death.
Like, literally. Like a Halloween movie.
No.
So creepy. Okay, I'm going to play a couple more because he continues on with.
Ew.
And then, let's see. Yeah. And then after that, I stripped his clothes. I cut open his belly to see his guts. They're really pink. Sorry, that was morbid. Destroyed his eyes by stabbing them.
Okay.
And then I cut off his hands. I put those in plastic Ziploc bags. And then I cut off his right arm at this joint and at this joint. And then at this arm, I tried cutting it here. And then I tried cutting it here. But what happened was I accidentally broke his bone. This one, it was poking out. And so I left that one here, partially cut, dismembered here, bone sticking out. And then I left his body there. And then I took the head, put it in a leftover pizza box from the dinner a few nights ago. And then I took the hands, put them in the back, drove home, hid the hands and head in my room, cleaned the knife, threw away the garbage with the blood on it, and then put the blood stained, wasn't stained, it had splatters on it. I put it in the dish, in the washing machine.
What did you put in there?
I put the outfit I murdered him in.
Did you wear it?
I was wearing it.
Okay.
In our washing machine, put it on high speed so it would effectively remove the blood. Okay. Washed it twice.
Okay.
I cut open his belly just to see his guts, and then if you guys didn't hear that, he was like, they're really pink, and starts laughing.
Yeah, and then he laughs, and he's like, oh, sorry, that was morbid.
What?
Yeah. He tells police, and I know, like, you guys can't see the video, but when he says, like, I cut his arm, like, here and here, it's at, like, the elbow joint and then the shoulder on both sides after he's cut off his hands. Then he tells police that he threw Warren's arms, like, in the area that he killed him. Like, after he cut the arms off, he just, like, and he pantomimes, it was like, oh, and like threw it over there, like just threw the arm. He calls them arm bits for whatever reason before leaving. And so they're still questioning him. And while they're doing that, they've sent a team out to this area that he says that he murdered Warren and that there should be arm pieces so that not only, you know, can they find Warren's remains, but they want to see if he's actually being truthful, right?
Yeah.
Because in part of this, when he's like, oh, and I was like under the bridge and all this time, like he's got a paper out like on the wall and he's drawing things. Like, map of like where he was and what he was doing and where things were. Like he's some like investigator, you know, showing them this crime scene.
Well, and it's, I mean, I get that he had like a giant ass knife, but it's not that big of a knife. And it's hard to dismember people.
He claims it was super easy and that he just like, whoop. I mean, the knife is like, it's pretty thick. It's a big knife, but still, like, he claims, he acts like it was really, like, oh, it's actually pretty easy, and I just, like, just popped it right through, like, it's no big deal. But he's kind of a big kid, too, like, okay. So I don't know. Obviously, I've never done this, but he makes it seem like it was just, like, oh, like it's no big fine. Deal, yeah, nothing.
And so much went into the planning of this, and, like, the afterthought, too, uh-huh. Like, you know, you kind of hope when you hear stories like this that maybe they aren't in their right mind.
Right.
And he clearly is planning on how to not get caught.
Absolutely.
And then after he commits the murder, he goes home, cleans the knife, mm-hmm. gets everything cleaned up, washes his clothes twice.
He wears three sets of gloves.
Yeah.
Because he claims that your fingerprints are going to print through the gloves. So he needs more than one pair so yeah, that he can make sure that nothing, you know, no fingerprints are left behind.
I feel like that's even more creepy. I mean, the crime itself is super, super creepy. But the fact that he had thought all of this out and had it, like he had obviously been planning to do this to somebody for a long ass time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's thought about a lot of details.
For sure. Yep. So officers that go out to the scene, they do end up finding Warren's arms and as well as like some of his clothes and like the rest of his belongings that were, you know, his sleeping bag and that kind of stuff that were there. So they do know that he's, you know, at least telling somewhat of the truth. So now we know where Warren's arms are. We have his head. We have his hands. But we don't have like the
torso
core part legs. Of his body, like the rest of his body, right?
Yeah.
So investigators like start asking him, hey, like, where's the rest of Brian's body or sorry, Warren's body? And Brian just starts in telling investigators about this three rule that he has for bodies. Okay. It's a rule that he's made up himself. And the three rule is after 3 hours, rigor mortis sets in. 3 days, the body begins to smell. 3 weeks, severe decomposition has started. 3 months, the body is unrecognizable. And 3 years, it's a skeleton.
Okay.
Okay, so there's two investigators, a male and a female, that are in here questioning him. And the woman, she kind of indulges him and, you know, is asking him, like, oh, like, did you make that up? Like, did you read that somewhere? Like, where did you learn about that? You know, she kind of, like, feeds into this a little bit. Kind of, I think it's, like, her strategy to, like, make him feel like he's cool,
yeah,
right? You know, like kind of keep him talking or whatever before they kind of guide him back to like, hey, so like what were your plans to do like with the body afterwards and or, you know, the parts that you took home, like what were you going to do with the head and the hands like that you took home? And so he tells them that eventually he was going to buy a paint bucket and he was going to seal the head in it and throw that in a ditch and then throw the hands in just a different location. And when they ask him why he dismembered Warren, he just says that he wanted to know what it was like. And then tells them, like, how easy it was to do.
Ew.
He tells officers that he has an interest in forensics and criminology, and that he was worried about leaving behind any evidence or getting caught, and states that's the reason that he chose Warren. He says, I don't mean this to be offensive, but police don't really care much about high-risk individuals like prostitutes or homeless people. So he was deliberately looking for someone who lived that kind of life, which is not untrue.
It is not untrue, but unfortunately, he picked the wrong...
Yeah.
Fortunately
for society.
But unfortunately Brian, for him.
Yeah. Brian picked probably the most well-known person in that town.
Yeah.
That was like the most loved and...
Yeah, just beloved.
The most missed.
Ugh.
Right?
Poor Warren.
I know. So they ask him again, like, so where is the rest of Warren's body? So Brian tells police that after he committed the murder, he went home to sleep. Because, you know.
Because it's exhausting.
Why not? but he couldn't because there ended up, I guess, being a small hole in one of his gloves, and he was afraid he'd left a partial print somewhere. So he drove back to the scene, he put Warren's body in the trunk, and then drove out to Blue Heron Boat Ramp. This is where he pulls up to the water, he takes Warren's body out of the trunk, places him in the water, and then says he uses his foot to push him out into the river because he didn't want to leave any prints. So that's why he used his foot. But he just lifted his whole ass body out of the trunk with your hands, with your dude. Unless you did that with your feet, which I don't think you did. So, like, I don't understand, like, that thinking, because you just lifted him out of the car.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
But you're going to use your foot to push him out because you don't want to leave any prints. So then after that, he tries to get back in his car and leave, and he's freaking stuck. And he can't get out, and he tries and he tries and he tries till he slides into the river. And then he talks about...
And thank God that he did.
Right? Oh, absolutely.
Because truly, if he had not done that, and this all hadn't have come about where his dad found the wallet, and there's all these things that happened, he probably wouldn't have been on anybody's radar.
No. No, why would they think it was him?
Nobody would have probably found poor Warren. He could have gotten away with this and then continued to kill for years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because you know everyone just gets better every time they do it.
Yeah.
So if they can get through that first one, then it seems to just, like, get worse and worse.
Yeah. So he talks about how, like, when he goes into the water, like, it starts filling up the car, like, immediately. And it's just getting, you know, higher and higher. And he says he starts kind of panicking because he's afraid he's going to die of hypothermia. Okay. And so he says he starts thinking, quote, oh, no. Sorry.
That was a direct quote.
He says, quote, oh, no, this is what I'm going to be remembered for. Dying of hypothermia in a botched attempt to hide a body. Okay. So this kind of shows that, like, his thought process is, like, how he's going to be remembered. Like, he's not concerned that, like, oh, that shit, I'm going to get caught for murder. Or, like, they're going to find me now for sure. It's that, like, oh, no, like, they're going to remember me now, like, for being, like, the idiot that botched the murder, like, botched the hiding of the body.
Episode of Dumb Criminals.
Yeah. Okay.
Ugh. I hate this kid.
Yeah. So he tells officers he's been planning to murder someone for about a year prior to this. And his final search history on his computer does corroborate this. His last three searches were how to cope with murderous thoughts, homicidal ideation, and homicidal thoughts every day. But in the month leading up to the murder, there was lots of, like, serial killer searches, you know, how do people react when being held at knife point, like, what happens if you get stabbed in the neck. He read a story about another homeless man in a different state that had been murdered. Just lots and lots of, like, it's always very dark, like, just, you know, very, very dark things. Now, if people were to look at my search history.
Same. I was just thinking that. I was like,
looks, yeah. And a lot of the stuff that he, like, really likes, you know, he has an interest in serial killers and all that kind of stuff. But once again, I think this plays into he has had some mental and behavioral issues for years. And it was never correctly, like, taken care of. Whereas, like, you and I, we don't have these same types of issues. And so it's
and I don't search homicidal issue. Like,
I don't,
things.
I don't look up, like, homicidal ideation or homicidal thoughts every day, or, like, you know, what, how do people react when being held at knife point? Like, none of that. But I definitely search up some, you know, kind of weird things because it goes with my
some
case.
Dark stuff. Absolutely.
You know, but I think it's a whole picture. It's not just like, oh, you wear black and you read about serial killers, so you're, like, weird and you're gonna murder people. Like, no, there's a whole, like, a whole thing that
there's
comes into
play. A
lot
more that goes into
a lot more. So there was a lot going on with him that did not get addressed.
But how was his relationship with his mom?
It actually was not bad. So
for once.
Yeah. And he does tell officers, like, the officer tries to ask him, you know, like, hey, a lot of these serial killers, like Ted Bundy and Ed Kemper, like, there's a sexual component to it. And he says, like, over and over again, like, it is not sexual for me, like, at all. But I mean, he still gets an excitement out of it, whether it's a sexual excitement or
not.
Yeah,
I mean, you could hear it in his voice how excited he was.
He gets an excitement, but I don't know that it was as sexually motivated as some of the other ones, because obviously he was just looking for, like, a homeless dude or whatever. Like, it wasn't kind of based off of that, but there is definitely, there's an excitement that happens, you know?
But sometimes it doesn't start out as sexual their first few kills in serial killers, and it's like, they get that taste and then they hone in on more of the sexual aspect. And
for sure,
their victimology can even change. So who knows what this kid would have turned into?
Absolutely.
An absolute monster.
Yeah. So he tells investigators that he would go on night drives quite often, like his parents said, but it was not to get out and think. It was to look for someone. And he said he would do it about every couple weeks. But he says he never came close to finding anyone. There was never like a, oh, I almost took this person or I almost did this to this person. He said like he would never have just like seen someone walking and attacked them because that's like too public.
Okay.
He wanted like a secluded area and he would drive around, but he never, he said there was never a time before this that it got even close to being a murder. But that's just because he hadn't done it yet, right?
Yeah.
So like look at how much Ed Kemper drove around before he actually started picking people up. And
he even did interviews that was like, I don't know, like some people, like sometimes you just see somebody and that you just know that that's your person.
Well, and for a while, he would drive around with like a knife under his leg with people in the car, but he didn't attack him. It was just like each step before he got to that final part. And so it's definitely an escalation.
Ugh.
But he does say that occasionally when he sees girls walking down the street, he glances at them and says, quote, it really is like Ed Kemper, where half of me says, well, I'm quite inept with women. I'm being honest. I'm no Casanova. But half of me says I want to take the girl home and make her feel nice. And the other half of me, just like what Ed said, is I want to see what her head looks like on a stick. And then he smiles.
Ew.
Okay. It's so creepy.
Ew, he is so much creepier than Ed.
Ed Kemper was like likable. Like that's what's so like hard with him is that he really is like a personable, likable person. This kid is not. So police ask Brian, like, so is this your first murder? Or like, have you done this before?
Yeah.
And he's like, no. And they're like, you know, we have to ask. And he's like, oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally. And then they're like, so have you ever practiced on anything like animals or anything like that? And he's like, yeah. So he tells them that on Halloween 2018, he was living with his father. There was a black cat that would always come around the house. So he herded the cat into a sleeping bag where he then beat and strangled it before breaking its neck. He then decapitated the cat, placed the body in a shoebox and the head in a wine cork box. And then after 3 days of hanging on to them, he threw them in the trash. He's like, and I got away with it.
There you go.
Right.
And 3 days. And how similar is that?
Well, it's the three. It's the three rule.
The three rule.
So.
But it's also like what he did with the cat.
Uh-huh. And then what he did.
Very similar.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
He cut off the head and then put it in boxes. And yeah, 100%. And he. So he says it's interesting. Oh, not. Sorry. But it is interesting to watch as you watch this documentary to see the police when they ask him, like, you know, why and when he began to have like these homicidal thoughts. So I really encourage you guys to go watch this just because it's very just interesting.
And it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's so interesting to watch them because I think they do a good job with questioning and they're very like polite with him. I mean, obviously, because he's just like given it up. Like there's no like needing to pry anything. But they're good with the way that they question, and it's just interesting to watch. But Brian does state, quote, call me weird, but I think everyone has had thoughts of shooting up their school. I suppose I just don't really like people.
No, Brian. Actually, not many people have those thoughts.
Nope. We don't all think about shooting up our school.
We might hate people at our school or
absolutely.
Think like, God, I can't stand that person. I've never imagined actually taking out a gun and shooting anybody in my life.
Nope.
Never once has that thought even popped into my head or been like, you know what? I want to open somebody's abdominal cavity just to see what their guts look like.
Yeah. No, thank you.
No.
Nope, that, it's not a normal
thought.
That's
not a thing.
Nope, and I don't like people either. So, like, it's not, that's not on the same level, Brian. It's just
no.
not.
No, Brian. You're way, way, way extra.
Way.
We are not on the same page on this.
So, Kylan Like is one of Brian's friends. And he Kylan, and her last name is Like.
Okay.
Right? And he has, like, a group of friends. So, he was bullied in school, and he was picked on, and people, you know, especially when he was, like, younger. But he does find this group of friends, and it's, like, several people. And it's just this group of kids. So, it's, like, not like he's a complete loner that, like, nobody wants to talk to and nobody wants to hang out with. And he's, you know, so alone and isolated and all this stuff. Like, no, he has, like, a group of friends, and they hang out and they do things. And the kids, like, a couple of them, they interview on this documentary, and they seem like very nice kids.
Okay, like, so not, like...
Not creepy.
Not people that think about shooting up their school as
no,
well.
Like, she's cute. Like, and I'll tell you a little bit more, because I'll talk about what they both say. But, so, Kylan, she says that Brian liked to get a rise out of people, and he would say things that, like, would make people double take. She said his jokes were always in the realm of dark humor. They always had to do with death, violence, destruction, or breaking the law. She said that either people thought he was funny or they hated him. And she had, like, a really close friend that was a bigger girl, and I guess he would call her, like, fat and a pig and, like, be kind of mean to her. And so, obviously, she hated him. Like, she didn't think he was funny at all. But, and once, like, a couple years prior, he was in a diversion program, and he had asked the other kids if they liked to eat something called crispy meat bites. And that was made by running your cat or dog through a meat grinder and then frying them up.
Stop it.
And the kids there did not think he was very funny. They were...
No, that's when I would be like, you're a serial killer.
Yeah.
Get away from me.
Kylan tells officers that Brian talked to her a lot about killing, and that she was surprised because she thought if he was going to do it, it would have been on a larger scale and not just one person.
But nobody thought to, like, report this guy?
She said she thought...
Like, if your friend is thinking that you might shoot up the school, actually, or kill people on a larger scale, that's an issue, guys.
It is. It really isn't. But I think, like, it's so hard for people to wrap their head around, like, this person is really going to be a killer. Like, I think they have a hard... Especially as kids, right? Like, your kids. And I think they just have a hard time...
I feel like if somebody makes a joke once in a while, right, that's dark or that's inappropriate, but that's their entire persona, their entire personality is nothing but dark, morbid things.
Yeah.
And they don't talk about anything else, and they talk about killing people, and you're worried that they're going to kill people on a larger scale. I think you say something.
Well, and she, like, the way she had said it was more just like, I'm actually, like, not necessarily surprised that he killed somebody. I just thought that if he were going to, it'd be, like, more than one person.
Yeah, that doesn't... That... Exactly. No.
Yeah.
Like, if you really think that about your, air quote, friend...
Here's my thing that I think I have a hard time with is that just seeing, like, him... Not that he's... I don't know. He's just not someone that I would want to hang out with, and it has nothing to do with him being, like, strange or weird. I just don't like his personality. So... I would be creeped out by him with all the way that he behaves and talks. These kids weren't. And so I don't know how that plays into it. Whereas, like, if I was with someone that did that all the time, I'd be like, I don't want to be friends with this person. Like, he's weird.
Yeah.
And creepy. But these guys just kind of, like, chalked it up to, like, oh, that's just Brian. Like, Brian being Brian. Brian being
that's
a creepy
so
serial
Brian.
Killer. Right? So Patrick, who's another one of his friends, stated that their friend group was just, like, a bunch of kids that didn't really fit anywhere else, and they just kind of had found each other, and they would just be, like, weird together. And he said that Brian was, like, a bit off. He was a little strange, saying, like, off-color things, and he would talk about death and murder. But, like I said, they just always took it as, like, Brian just being Brian. But the group would, like, joke around that if one of them was going to be a serial killer, it was going to be Brian. But afterwards, he's like, but it was, like, it really was a joke. We didn't really think he was going to. It was just, like, a joke.
Oh, my God. They probably, like, played into this so much that it was probably, like.
But I think, like, I really think in their heads, like, they didn't really think he would get to that point. Like, they didn't really think he would do it. They just were, like, he's so creepy. Like, if anyone was going to do it, it would be Brian. But I don't think they really, really thought, because I think that's hard for you to wrap your head around.
I feel like right now, if you have anyone in your life where you're, like, Yeah. If the police came to me right now and said that he had killed somebody, and you're like, I wouldn't be. The right. only thing that surprises me about that statement is that it wasn't on
only,
a larger
yeah,
scale.
It was only one person.
Then you should probably report that person or try and get them help or something, because that is not okay.
No, I mean, I don't have anyone like that right. in my life, and I never have, and I don't think I ever will. So I don't know. But I'm also a grown up, and I can't, like, I don't want to be friends with most people. So now Brian's mother told investigators, because they asked her, like, does he have any, like, mental issues? Does he have any, you know, anything like going on? So she says that he was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 5, and they did medicate him, but that it wasn't until middle school that he started to show more antisocial behavior. And when he was in 11th grade, they had a big meeting with the school because kids were now telling people that they did not feel safe around him. So they end up taking him in for some testing again at this point, and doctors say that, like, yes, he's ADHD. They also diagnose him with high-functioning autism, so he's got Asperger's and he's on the spectrum. But the doctor also says that he believes Brian needs further testing for potential psychosis. So his mother says that she got referrals and she called around town, but no one in the town could see him. But that he seemed to be doing good, and he had graduated high school and he'd got a job working part-time at Safeway. So they just left it at that.
So you have a doctor who's telling you that your child might be a psycho, and you're like, oh, guess they're booked. I'm just going to let this slide.
Yeah, even if it was like, there's no one in our town, because, you know, Grand Junction, I don't think, is, like, huge.
Yeah, then you, like, drive even, to another right? fucking town.
Yeah, even if they're like, sorry, no one in this town, like, does that kind of work? I'd be like, well, where is the closest town? Like, and I'll, okay, I'll read more, too, to, like, let you know. So, Brian's father said that he knew that something, like, was not okay with Brian, and he's like, he's obviously very sick. He's like, I just didn't know how serious it was. He said that there would be times when Brian would just look at him and he'd be, like, so cold and empty looking.
Oh,
right.
And shark eyes.
So, yeah, absolutely. So the year before Brian's murder, Brian's parents also found a kit that he had been making that contained hammers, shovels, knives, large zip ties, duct tape, and a saw.
Stop.
He told police that he intended to hurt people with said kit. That's the whole purpose of it. It was a kill kit. But that he was able to convince his parents that it was for other means. But they did give him an ultimatum and said that if, like, he had to get rid of the entire thing, or they were going to call the police. So he said he did. He got rid of it. Okay. Brian's high school English teacher, Shannon Miller, told police that Brian always wanted to read things that were not available in the school library. He read a book on the Son of Sam, and then she remembered him wanting to read all about the Columbine shooting. His high school journalism teacher, Trent Wuster, said that he remembered Brian wanting to do a paper on Columbine, and that he seemed to have an unhealthy fascination with school shootings. Jeremy Felt, who was Brian's medieval history teacher, which I think sounds like the funnest
medieval
class.
Medieval history?
Yeah.
Hells yeah.
Right? I wish we would have had that in high
school.
Sign
me up.
Right? I was like, medieval. Because at first I was like, oh, as history teacher. And I was like, oh, no, as medieval history. Like,
that's
awesome. But he said that he was not the only class that was having issues with Brian. And when they met with his mother, she seemed not to understand, like, what the big deal was with his behavior, and that she didn't seem very interested in, like, making changes.
Can you imagine a paper that he would have written on the Columbine shooting?
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, it would have been from the perspective of how the shooters were
It would
were
have been a very,
right,
like, love, yeah, like, kind of in, like, a, yeah, like, yeah, in an admiration type of, yeah, a paper, for sure.
Gross.
Jolynn Parks, who was a family friend and was also his manager at Safeway, said that she remembered Brian's mother thinking that the school officials were unfairly targeting her son.
Okay.
In 2018, Brian had an assignment in English class to give a speech, and his English teacher, like, would encourage the kids to do something when they gave these speeches to, like, grab attention, like, wear a costume, bring props, like, you know, stuff to just kind of, like,
oh, shit,
you know, liven it up, right?
Yes.
So Brian gives whatever, I don't even know what his speech was about, but apparently he made this, like, and there's pictures of it, but it's like a whip, and it's like he wrapped something, I don't know, with maybe, like, duct tape, so it's, like, kind of hard.
Okay.
So it's got like a bigger kind of end on one side, and then it's got like a long like whip thing, right?
Okay.
He used it during a speech. He said the speech was actually pretty good. He, you know, was very like boisterous with his thing, whatever, was fine. But later that day, he ended up whipping a special needs student while waiting for the bus.
You freaking dick.
Right? So he was arrested on assault charges for that. I don't know what happened, obviously, because he was a minor. So I don't know how what went down with that. And that might have been why he was in that diversion program. I'm not sure. But
damn.
Yeah. On January 15th, 2019, he was suspended from school for intentionally causing a panic attack in another student that suffered from PTSD. And he'd been previously made aware of this student. Something had happened to her and she had a severe fear of loud noises. So he would run up behind her and clap his hands really loud in her ear.
What?
Until she had a severe panic attack and like had to go home.
What the fuck, right? Man?
On February 11th, 2019, so like a month later, he was suspended for making inappropriate sexual comments. When his parents talk of these issues, though, they seem to think, like, you know, that he's kind of being targeted and that it wasn't like they like very much downplay all of these things and like kind of, you know,
I get from a parent perspective not wanting to feel like your kid is a shit stick.
Right.
Right.
For sure.
Especially when they're on the spectrum and it's like, you know, you know that they are having struggles. You don't want to believe that your kid is going to do something like this. But when all of these signs are there,
mm-hmm.
it's your job as a parent to get them help
mm-hmm.
and to try and keep other people safe.
Yeah. And everyone's not picking on your kid. Like, there's all these reports of he's actually doing these things.
If it's one person, right? Or if it's a group of people that you keep having issues with, sure. But this is multiple people across the entire school.
And
there's police reports. Like, he's physically assaulting people and forcing girls to have panic attacks.
Yeah, like it's not something where like someone
and doing nothing but talking about like morbid shit.
Yeah, it's stuff that he's actually doing. So it's not like a, you know, I'm picking on this person, saying something to him, like being mean to him, whatever. Like, these are things he's actually doing. So if he's doing these things, no matter what the reason is, there's something going on and you need to figure out what it is. And it's not everyone else's job to like make sure that Brian behaves appropriately. It's just not.
And it's sad that this has gone on for so many years. And mm-hmm. like, I'm sorry, I get it to an extent. Like, you, to an extent, like if, you know, my kids did something, I might be in a little bit of a denial. But when all this stuff adds up as a parent, you have to open your damn eyes.
Yeah, if it's one time, that's one thing. But
get your kid help.
Repetitively, like if it's the same, like you having this behavior over and over and over again for a period of years and you're talking to your kid and it's the same stuff and they're constantly getting in trouble and they're constantly acting this way, something is going on.
Especially,
and you need to get it fixed.
Especially when you've had like professional help in the past and they've said, hey, your kid might be mm-hmm. a psychopath.
Well, and here's the thing, too, because in the documentary, they do say it several times about him being on the spectrum and him having autism. Yes,
that
he has Asperger's.
But
because it frustrates me because Alexander is on the spectrum and he's, you know, he was diagnosed as moderate to severe autism. That's someone who has like autism and he would never in a million years murder somebody like in that sort of a way.
No,
this has nothing to do with him having autism. You can tell that he does have it. He's a little socially awkward. He doesn't make a lot of eye contact. Like, you can see those signs, but brain wise, he is perfectly, he knows right from wrong. He knows he was doing something illegal. He
Absolutely.
Planned it out. Like, it's all of that. Like, it has nothing to do with
it
that.
It has nothing to do with
not
that
at all. And so I don't want people to get that wrong idea.
And I
that,
feel
like
it's very uncommon for autistic people to commit violent crimes.
Yes. Look at
usually
how many people have
big,
autism.
Like, yeah.
They're not out murdering
people.
Like,
they might be socially awkward or not catch on to clues. Or, I mean, there's so
right.
many different things that go into autism and different places on the spectrum. But that does not innately make them violent people.
No. And usually when they are violent, it's when they're more severely, like, you know, more on the spectrum, like have a little more severe autism. And it's because they don't know how to express their frustration. just like a toddler does. So like a toddler screams and they cries and they hit you and they freak out because they can't talk fully and they can't like express like their emotions and they're not sure how to. That's when they do that. And that's a lot of times with people who are autistic when they're on the spectrum and it's, you know, more severe and they don't understand that stuff. That's how they react because it's the only way they know how to get their frustration out.
And they lash out for a second. But for a second. And then go back to their
and then it's
normal.
Yeah. And a lot of times they feel bad.
And they don't plan this shit.
No. No.
It's like spur of the moment, like you said, because of that like emotional buildup.
Right.
And they get frustrated and lashes out and then it's over.
Yeah. Yes. So, interestingly, so Brian's dad, he started the Save a Life life jacket program.
Okay.
And so he like ran it down to the boat dock. So that's what his dad did. Okay. Do you want to know what his mom did?
What?
She ran a daycare out of her home.
Shut up.
So on the day when she found a severed head in her son's closet, she had children in her home that she was watching. In this documentary, they say that her daycare was for kids from 2 to 5.
My heart literally just stopped. Like, for a minute.
Yeah. So she had to call these parents and be like, hey, like, I have a family emergency. You need to come and pick up your kids.
I have a family emergency. I just found out that my
there's a son's severed head in my kitchen sink.
In his closet.
Yeah, in my kitchen sink now. You got to come get your kids.
What the hell?
Yeah. Can you imagine?
No.
And she, I mean, I do think she's kind of a dumb lady. I really do. Like, there was definitely signs of things that needed to be taken care of. But she seems like a very nice lady. Like, very nice. Very genuine. She knows right from wrong. Like, I do feel like she was probably a really great daycare daycare provider. I do. And can you imagine if, like, your kids and you're like, oh my god, like, she said everyone was like, I hope everything's okay, like, you know, whatever. And then you see on the freaking news that it was because her son murdered someone and had body parts in the house?
No.
You would never take your kid back to daycare ever again. How could you do that?
Never.
I mean, in the realm of the world, like, that would, you would have to be the most unlucky person to find another person who has a murderous son.
But and still, thank God that he didn't target any kids.
No, and they, and she, like
he people, had access to all of these kids.
But everyone said he was, like, really loving to his dogs. He was really good. Like, he was nice to kids. Like, he was, I don't think he wanted to murder kids.
Like, yeah,
I think
that's what I'm saying. Like, thank God that wasn't in his realm.
Yeah.
Because
kids would be too would be too much on the radar for police. So that would never be like his victim profile. But after all the questioning is complete, Brian is taken into custody and he's placed in the county jail. And it takes almost 2 years to prepare for court and get everything situated. But in January of 2023, Brian Cohey pleaded not guilty to first degree murder, tampering with a deceased human body, and tampering with evidence by reason of insanity.
But yeah, dude, there's no way you're insane after you went through that much planning.
Especially with like all of this
and disposal process.
Of all of the stuff that he did. But
you knew exactly what you were
doing. I think pretty much like with this interview that he has with police before he has a lawyer, he's like screwed over any sort of defense they could use because he just, I mean, he just
I'm
tells
sure the
it
defense
all. So they're like,
attorney got this and was like, well, shit.
I guess
what do I do with this?
Yeah. So, you know, probably just did the best he could. But in both opening and closing statements, Brian's attorney argued that with his combination of mental illness, it overrode his ability to know right from wrong. No, I mean,
lies.
Yeah. During the committal of the murder. But during the trial, psychologist Paul Sprague testified on the defense side, stating that Brian was experiencing a major depressive episode with psychotic features when he committed the murder. Which, whatever. He still knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Thomas Gray, who was a psychologist with the state of Colorado's Behavioral Health Office, who helped conduct an evaluation, testified that Brian was not insane due to his ability to try and hide evidence, showing that he knew right from wrong at the time of the murder. The trial took 12 days, and after 2 days of deliberation, on February 3rd, 2023, he was found guilty of first-degree murder, 2 counts of tampering with a deceased human body, and tampering with evidence. And on February 6th, 2023, Brian, at the age of 21, was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Good.
And he is currently serving out his sentence in the Buena Vista Correctional Complex. And if you remember, in that first like clip I think I played, he's like, I'm probably going away for 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Nope, Brian, your whole life.
Forever.
Your whole life.
Forever.
And when he was in custody, he like kind of asked him, you know, like how he felt or whatever. And he just was like, well, it, you know, said something that happened. It sucks, but it happened. And by sucks, he was just really meant that he, you know, was locked up and he didn't have his friends and he really missed video games. But never once did he show remorse or say that he was sorry for what he had done.
Ugh.
So.
This kid is so freaking creepy.
He's so creepy.
And I'm just really glad that he got caught the first time. Because
oh, me too. Yeah.
This would have gone on for years.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, for sure.
Until he did get caught, he would have killed people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Homeless people.
Yeah, after the first time and you've broken the ice there, now it's not going to be such a, you know, hard thing to do again. So, there's the case of Brian Cohey.
Dang.
Yeah.
That was a crazy one.
That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, good recommendation.
Yeah, it was, thank you. That was a great one.
That was, and well job.
Well job.
Well done.
Thanks.
Good job and well done.
Well job.
All at the same time. Well job. Yeah, that was a really good one.
Okay, should we do our soul cleanse?
Yes.
Soul cleanse.
Okay, this is an interesting story. It's a little bit sad, a little bit funny, but has a happy ending.
Okay, perfect.
So this couple in Lehigh, Utah, has this really sweet cat named Galena, and she's a calico, and her favorite hiding spot is in boxes, which apparently is very, very common in cats. I don't have cats. So she's this really sweet cat. She doesn't like meow. She's not very loud. So they were shipping back some shoes to Amazon. And had the shoes all ready to go. The husband came in, packaged up the box, sent it, like taped it up. They sent it, never heard a peep. All of a sudden, their cat vanished. And they were like looking everywhere. Where did this cat go? What happened? Can't find the stupid cat. So they get a call 6 days later.
Oh, no.
Saying, we have your cat and it's in California. And they're like, what? Like, what? So turns out that they actually shipped the cat. So she was accidentally shipped in the box that she had snuck into all the way to a fulfillment center in Jarupa Valley, California. And it says, epitomizing the internet adage of if it fits, it ships.
Oh, my God.
She cozied up in an Amazon box, aware that the shoes she was sharing it with were to be returned. So the owners were devastated and couldn't figure out what had happened. But they said that there were three miracles that happened in this situation. First of all, Matt, which is the husband, didn't seal the box perfectly. So air was able to get inside so she could breathe.
Okay.
Second was the weather wasn't very hot at the time, because otherwise she probably would have died. And third was that the only person in the whole Amazon location that knew how to handle such a situation was the one that found the animal.
Oh, okay.
So she finds the animal, and she also happens to love cats and fosters/rescues them as a side gig. So she gets this cat and she's like, what is happening? Finds the cat in the return box, gets it food and water, takes it home that night. And she said, it was the sweetest cat. I knew it had to belong to somebody, but I didn't know like where to go from here. And so the cat warmed up to this lady and eventually let her pet her and took her home that night and then took her to the vet to get her checked out.
Yeah.
And she was microchipped.
Okay.
So that's how they got the phone number and everything. And then the family gets the call and they're like, what? So they drove to California
Got
their cat. But this cat survived 6 days locked in a box with no food,
okay,
no water, and very limited air.
Okay, here's the thing. Did that box not feel a little bit heavy for shoes?
Right? And it's a pretty decent-sized cat.
Like, did it not, Matt, did it not feel a little heavy? But that is the quietest cat. Like, how did the cat not move or make noise?
It didn't do anything. But if you look at the pictures, I'll show you. Hang on one second.
Can you imagine opening the box?
And being like,
no. What is happening?
No, and then this says, at the very bottom, it says, GNN has reported on how science has shown that cats will find boxes to sit in, even if the box itself is an optical illusion.
The hell does that mean?
There's a strange, if almost unbelievable lesson in the story of Galena and the Amazon box. If you've got to mail something big, check for fur before sending.
Okay, I just want to know what an optical illusion box is.
I don't know, but look, it's a pretty good sized cat.
Oh my god, she's huge!
Like, she looks pretty damn heavy. And here's the lady holding her. She's a big cat.
She's really big.
But she loves boxes. Apparently, she just, like, climbs in boxes and curls up. And it says that it's her favorite, like, napping spot. They find her in boxes all the time. And so she just didn't make a peep. She was like, this is great. This is perfect.
Oh my God. I can't, like...
Well, and I'm sure somebody was probably like, this asshole just packaged up their cat. Because, you know, people do things, mean things to pets all the time. When they get sick of them,
How did he not see the cat?
Well, I don't think that was the box that it shipped in. Okay. That just has a picture of the cat in the box. But it sounds, if you read the whole article, it sounds like she had kind of closed the box and the cat wiggled her way in, but the box was still somehow slightly closed. So he didn't look in it because he knew it was ready to go. So he just taped it up.
Man.
Shipped it off.
That is crazy.
And you know the postal service isn't gentle.
No.
I'm sure that poor cat was traumatized.
Had to have made a noise at some point. It was like, hello?
Hello?
I'm in here. Someone, please help. I have to go pee really bad.
I'm sure those shoes were covered in cat piss.
Oh. You're not getting your money back on those babies.
Return denied.
Yeah. These shoes are covered in cat pee. I don't think we can accept these. Oh, man. Well, yeah. I'm glad they found their cat and they were able to get her back.
Yep.
Take a little, time off work, road trip.
And, yeah, get to go to California. And it was a good lesson to get your animals microchipped if you really love them.
For
because
sure.
You
well,
never
I
know.
Mean, wouldn't they have known where the package was coming
That's
from?
That's what I thought. But it sounds like in the return center, maybe it wasn't
Okay.
Maybe the boxes all get opened and then there's conveyor belts and I don't know how it works.
But I'm glad it all worked out.
I mean, apparently she had to take her to the vet to see if she was microchipped, so.
That is so crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm glad you got your cat back.
Yeah.
Everybody check your boxes if you have cats.
Right?
My dogs are very vocal, and so we would never be able to,
I have to check.
Even put them in a box for a minute.
No. I'm going to have to check my boxes for children, because Nolan's always in a box. He asked to sleep in his box again the other day in his bed. And I was like, whatever.
Here's your box troll.
Threw his box on him. I was like, here's your box. Go to sleep.
Did you ever see that show, Box Trolls?
I don't know if I did. It sounds familiar, but
I don't know if I saw that show.
I don't know if I ever saw it.
I hate it.
Well,
you should watch it.
I have a box troll child. So
but yeah, you do have a box troll. Anyways. All right. So. Thanks for listening for another week. Please go and give us a 5-star review. Like and subscribe so you get the automatic downloads.
Tell all your friends.
Tell all your friends. Go support us on Patreon. Go buy us a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Buy us a coffee.
TikTok.
Check out our Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, website.
Website, yeah. Check out our website.
Sinners Among Saints podcast.com. and we're Sinners Among Saints podcast.
But you can get to all of our stuff on our website. So if you go to our website, you can get to buy us a drink. You can listen to the latest episode. You can get all of our social media accounts.
Nice little place.
Yep. So
it's great.
It's a one-stop shop.
One-stop shopping. All right. And remember to keep listening if you want in on the sin.
Bye, guys.
Bye.